Second time here in the 3 days. I davened mincha here on Shabbos afternoon and got levi. It was a historic occasion for me because I have stood on this bimah for the last 15 years, and last Shabbos was the first time that I stood facing front. That's Kovod HaTzibur. That's the Gemorian Sota learns the concept of Kovod HaTzibur from the fact that the Kohanim turn their backs on the Oren to face the Tzibur. That's the Yusuf of Kovod HaTzibur. That's where they kiss the Paroches before they turn around. In other words, it's a sign of respect, clapping the Oren, and then they turn to face the Tzibur. Now, the beginning of Parshas Bo introduces the final set of Makos. Actually, the way we have them, the Tzach Hadash Ba'achav, so the Borod, the Ba of Ba'achav, has already happened. But we are just before the eighth Makos, Makos Arbe, the Makos of Locus. And the Pasuk reads, and we're at the beginning of Perek Yud, Pasuk Aleph, Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Boel Paro, come to Paro. For I have hardened his heart, the heart of his servants. The word ki, as we know, Rabbi Nubachias told us in Parshas Vayechi, and it's in Ibn Ezra in Parshas Kisiso, that even as the Gemara tells us that the word ki can mean four things, ki mishamish ba'arba lashonos, there are certain Rishonim who understand it can have a fifth meaning. The Ibn Ezra, quoting the name of Rabbeinu Marinus, explains that the word ki can mean af alpi. Hashem asked, and Moshe Rabbeinu asked the HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yelechno Hashem bekirbeinu, ki am kesheorefu. Now, if the word ki means because, that's hardly an enticing reason. Ki am kesheoref, af alpi sha'am kesheorefu. And similarly, the Ibn Ezra in his Perush on Tehillim, Perikaf Heves Solachto La'avoni, Ki Ravhu. Now, Ki means because, that's hardly a reason. Afal Pisha Ravhu. Ki Ani Echbadati Eslibo, according to those Rishonim, means even though, right, Afal Pisha Echbadati Eslibo, go, or come, more correctly. Lema'an Shisi, Ososai Eilibikibo, in order to place my signs in his midst. Ulema'an, and in order to saper ba'oznei bincha, uven bincha, and in order that you should tell all future generations, eis asher his alalti b'mitzrayim, everything that I toyed with Mitzrayim, beso sasasher samtiba. Now, what's very interesting is, that's it. Meaning, that is the end of the communication of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Moshe. What then happens is, Moshe comes to Paro and says, let my people go, shalachami v'yavduni, and if you don't, there'll be a plague of arbe, of locusts. Im ma'ena tala shalech esami, hinini mevi macha arbe b'gvulecha. Now what's most interesting is, and this is unusual, HaKadosh Baruch Hu never openly told Moshe that there will be Arba. Bederach Klal, the way that the warnings go, is Hashem says to Moshe, go tell Paro the following. Moshe then goes to Paro and says the following. In other words, Hashem tells Moshe what the Makkah will be, and then Moshe tells Paro. Here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not tell Moshe that there would be a plague of locusts. He said, there will be plagues for the following reasons. It didn't say what they were. Moshe then goes to Paro and says, there will be Arba. So that's interesting. Now, this is commented on by the Ramban. And Ramban says that as much as Makas Arba is not mentioned explicitly in the opening two psukim, but it is alluded to in its effect. Because the words are ulaman tesaper ba'ozne bincha ube bincha. It's something that will be spoken about for all generations. And what's interesting is, says Ramban, we find elsewhere, it's yet to be explained, but we find elsewhere that a plague of locusts, which just, you know, devastates the landscape, ruins all the food, plunges the country into famine ultimately, is something that people will speak about. Famines have a history. I mean, I'm Irish, so of all the things that they talk about, the single most devastating historical event is always the potato famine. The Irish always remember that, and not just because they were green. And similarly here, there's something about a plague of locusts, they'll be talking about it. The Ramban refers us to the Treyasar, commonly miscalled the minor prophets. That's a disgrace to the Treyasar. Their works are shorter. They are not minor prophets. Some of them were the teachers of the major prophets. So the Treyasar, and in fact I checked with Art Scroll that translates them as the 12 prophets, which is more correct and more literal. They were the 12 prophets in one. In Sefer Yoel begins with the plague of locusts, and it has a very similar introduction. Though they will be talking about this for generations. In other words, we do find there is an oblique reference to the Makas Arbe in the way that its effect is described. But still, we have not answered the question. We've only shaped it. Because now the question is, why is it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would choose, so to speak, not so much to refer to the plague by name, but by goal and by effect? The only thing that I mention in the first two psukim is, in order to place my signs in its midst, and in order that you will talk about it for all generations. Those are emanations of the plague, but the name of the identity of the plague is not mentioned expressly, only alluded to. So why would that be? That's an interesting question to ponder. It's also interesting that when Moshe Rabbeinu goes to Paro, he, and in his preamble, in his warning to Paro, he says something that he hasn't said yet. In other words, if we would recollect in our own description, what does Moshe typically say to Paro when he wishes to warn him? He begins by saying, "Komar Shem Elokei Avrim Shalach Es Ami V'Yavduni." Here, Moshe says something else. Pasuk Gimel, "Vayavo Moshe Ba'aron Al Paro." Vayomer Elav, they come to Paro, they say, "Komar Shem Elokei Avrim." So says Hashem, and what does he say? Ad moasai me anta le anos mi panai. For how long will you refuse to be contrite in front of me? And then says Shalach esemi fiavduni. So it's very interesting that we have a dimension that has been added into the introductory speech of Moshe that we never had before. It was always straight into Shalach esemi fiavduni or else. But here it begins with Ad mosai me anta leanos mi panai, and then moves into Shalach esemi fiavduni. Reb Velvel Soloveitchik, in his collected Pirushim on the Torah, the son of Reb Chaim, Rav of Brisk, explains, and I say the Rav of Brisk, so do not be surprised, that he explains all of the above based on a statement of the Rambam. And the Rambam, in the beginning of Hilchas Tanis, explains that it's very important, we hope that it never happens, but lo aleinu, if something goes wrong, calamity strikes, peronos happen, people need to take stock of their deeds. Because if they don't, then in a sense, that itself is a wrongdoing. Ignoring a message from HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a wrongdoing. And in this vein, the Rambam proceeds to describe the flow of the Tochacha in the end of Parshas Bechukosai, which basically says, if the Jewish people, chas v'chalila, do not keep mitzvahs as they should, then bad things will happen. And then it says, v'im tilchui mikeri, says Rambam, which is an expression of mikre. If you see all these things as happening to you as mere happenstance, chance, afani aleichim achem bekeri, that means that more of the above will happen. In other words, things can actually get worse. It can be a downward spiral because a message that is ignored becomes an additional aveira. That's the message of the Tochacha. Now, what's interesting is says Reb Velvel, the beginning of Parshas Bo is the point where Paro's Averos have become cumulative. That is to say, he has reached a point where he's added another reason for be deserving of being punished. Not only the persecution of the Jewish people, but when you think about it, with each additional Makkah that he ignores, he adds a further wrongdoing of having ignored a Makkah, which is itself an Avera. And therefore, at a certain critical point, part of what he's doing wrong is no longer just his persecution of the Jewish people, which by this time has watered down. But why are you paying no attention to the plagues? That can become a dominant theme. Ad masai me'anta le'alos mipanai. And what's very interesting is, according to some, this is the reason why the 10 makas, we're used to tetzach, adash, ba'achad, where they're split up into 3, 3, and 4. But the Parshas doesn't split them up that way. The Parshas splits them up between Va'era and Bo, 7 and 3. How does that come to be a chalukah of any sort? Except the Abarbanel already told us that the pattern is derived, or pre-derived, from the Tochacha. Because all of the calamities of the Tochacha come in increments of 7. Vosafti liyasra eschem sheva al chatoseichem. And therefore there is something about a sevenfold calamity, and at that point which is yet ignored, that is an incremental block of Tochacha dimensions. And therefore, the first time we see this in the Chumash is before the Tochacha. We see it in Parshas Va'era, because when Paro goes 7 Makos, he is the first one to have received Sheva al Chatoseichem and ignored it all. He has now entered a new phase where he is guilty not only of crimes against the Jewish people, but as Moshe adds this new element, Ad Masai Me'anta Le'anos Mipanai. And that being the case, at this point, the Makos, and this I think in atmospherically, the Makos take on a new dimension. As surely as Paro's Averos take on a new dimension, so do the Makos. As if to say, until now let us say simply that the Makos come in response for Paro's wrongdoing against the Jewish people. That is an internal circuit, that is an internal cause and effect. Because he did this against the Jewish people, he received these makas. As soon as the makas are coming for crimes beyond his crimes to the Jewish people, that means that they have elements to them which are beyond the midah keneged midah of him and the Jewish people. There are other points at stake. Specifically, if the dimension that has been added is Paro refuses to recognize any signs from God, then the nature of the makas as they will come in now is that they should be unmistakably signs from God that people will talk about for all generations. And that's why the focus, it's a very delicate point, but the focus of the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu describes the Makkah at the beginning of Bo is not by name, because the identity is no longer important. It's no longer the key. It is the outcome of the Makkah. That people will always talk about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu dealt with Paro. That element comes in as a punishment for Paro refusing to realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was dealing with him at all. And how interesting it is that we find that these final three Makos, none of them can be said to be purely punishment for Paro for crimes against the Jewish people. Arbe, we see, is in order to create this plague that will be spoken about for generations. After Arbe comes number 9, Choshech, and Choshech is as much for the benefit of the Jewish people, overtly so, as it is for the detriment of the Mitzrayim, as if to say, no one likes to sit in darkness, whatever type of darkness it would be. It was unpleasant, but it was as much for the Jewish people, whether it was the fact that those 4/5 that didn't want to come out had a respectful burial at that time, or whether it was the fact that the Jewish people were able to see exactly what the Egyptians had for purposes of Rechush Gadol, there is as much focus on the benefit accruing to the Jewish people as there was punishment endured by the Egyptians, because these final three Makkos have a different hue altogether. And finally, of course, Makkos Bechoros, which is where Yetzias Mitzrayim itself happened. With Makkos Bechoros comes is activated the critical level of Kedushas Yisrael called Bechoreim Haragta or Bechorcha Ga'alta, and therefore it's most interesting to note that the Chalukah of the Makkos, seven in last week's Parsha and three in this week's Parsha, is not merely arithmetical, but is chemical. There are mahuti, essential differences between the nature and purpose of the first seven Makkos as opposed to the final three. So that's a very interesting insight into these Makkos that characterize and open Parshas Bo. Now, Moshe comes to Paro, Moshe and Aaron, as is described in Pasuk, the earlier Psukim, and there is a revolution. Now, it is as revolutions go, it's relatively minor, it's a murmur, but it happens. And that's in Pasuk Ches. It begins in Pasuk Zayin, because Avdei Faro, if we just read the Psukim just to see, Vayomu Avdei Paro Elav, the Makkah of Arba has been forecast. If the Makkah of Arba happens, this will not be something that will be endured for a mere week, and I used mere week in inverted commas, it will destroy the food for a year. So it's very serious. And Avdei Paro speak up. Avdei Paro never speak up against Paro. But it's reached a point. As they say in poetic modern Hebrew, Yesh Gevul. It's reached the point where someone has to say something. Vayomer Avdei Paro Elav. Ad Mosai Yezot Zelonu Lomokesh. For how long will this be a stumbling block for us? Shalach Eson Hashim, let them go. V'yavdu Es Hashem Elokeihem. Haterem Tidaki Avdei Mitzrayim. Do you not know Mitzrayim is lost? Let them go. They can't help themselves. Avdei Paro, they have to speak up. What are they saying? Your Majesty, you are great, but this is ridiculous. Let them go. And Paro listens to them. Vayushav es Moshe ves Aaron al Paro. So Moshe and Aaron are brought back. Vayoma aleim lechu avdu es Hashem Elokeichem. Go. He gives in. So who's going? Mi v'mi ha'olchim. So Moshe says, everyone. Vayomer Moshe ben Aaron v'zkeneinu neleich b'vaneinu v'vnaseinu b'tzeneinu v'kareinu neleich ki chag Hashemanu. We're all going. It's a religious festival. Says Paro in Pasuk Yud and Yud Aleph, no, I'm not letting you all go. L'chuna gvarim v'vdu es Hashem. Let the men go. Pasuk Yud Aleph. Ki osa atem v'vakshim. Vayigorish Osam. And he throws them out. Now the important parshanut question here is, how is it that Paro, who has succumbed to pressure from his own court to give in to their demands, has acquitted himself vis-a-vis his servants and feels entitled to dismiss Moshe and Aaron? 5 minutes ago, your avodim were saying the country is being destroyed, give them what they want. Paro calls them back and says, who's going? They said, everyone. He says, I'm not prepared for that. Go. He dismisses them again. Why was there no murmur the second time round? Avdei Paro should yet have said, if they're able to speak up again, give them what they want. And apparently, there's nothing more to be said. And there's a fascinating insight into this exchange, which comes from the Chasam Sofer. The Chasam Sofer explains that essentially what is being discussed here is the nature of religion and who has a role in any religious process or ceremony, to borrow a term. That is to say, there are many religions whereby religion is not really for everyone. There are religious people, They are the ones who do the religious rites. And everybody else may be part of it nominally. But if you would ever have a religious event, I mean, who is it for? The men are encouraged to secede, and they're the ones who take care of it, and it's localized and exclusive. And that's how power views religion. Now, if that's true, so his servants are saying, look, all they want is a religious festival. Can you not give them that, a religious festival? And Pharaoh agrees. And he calls back Moshe and says, I'm prepared. L'chu ivdu es Hashem Elokeichem. You win. If really what you want is a religious festival, go. But who's going? Moshe's answer was so strange in the ears of Pharaoh that he was forced to conclude that Moshe is lying. Why? Because Moshe says, you know who's going? We're all going. Everyone. Binareinu v'zkeinenu lech. We're also going to bring our children. What role do children have in a religious event? And we're not talking about if they end up as sacrifices. What role does the broader family have in a religious event? Moshe says, we're all going. Ki chag Hashem lanu. It's a religious festival for us. For all of us. Paro looks at his servants and says, you see, I told you they were lying. Because that's a contradiction in terms. Family and religion do not coexist. And therefore, if they say that they all want to go out for this quote-unquote religious festival, there must be much more to it, and they're lying, and if they're lying, they're covering up something, we can yet prevail. Lo cheni says, L'chuna ha'gvorim v'ibdu es Hashem, just the men, because what is service of God about if not just for men? Ki osatem v'vakshem, that's what you want, isn't it? And he throws them out, and there's no dissent from his servants because they're equally baffled as he is. Religious ceremony, religious experience, a 3-day religious retreat for the whole family? No one could work that out. And they agreed with Pharaoh ultimately. And what's amazing is, and this says so much about Yiddishkeit, about Torah, especially Chag HaPesach, the halacha is, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Korban Pesach, of course, which is the central korban, it's the central avoda experience, it is not acceptable for one person to offer a Korban Pesach by himself. It always happens lefi families, and certainly lefi groups. And that's what it is. And so it remains. So it remains Pesach more than any other time. A Seder night, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach once remarked, in a halachic vein, not so much in an atmospheric vein, that what we call Seder night, it must be a euphemism. He would have called it lack of Seder night. That's for halachic reasons, because there is no halacha that moves in a straight line. Kiddush Mokum Suda, Hefsek, everything. You've got 4 cups, you make a bracha on each one of them. None of it works in a straight line. And none of it is misudar according to the halacha. And we call it Leila Seder. And for sure none of it's misudar just in terms of order and decorum. Any Jewish Seder should aptly be called Leil I HaSeder. Everyone is running around everywhere. He says Manishtana, then he says Manishtana, then he has a question, and it's one big, or to borrow the scientific expression, Balagan. And that is Pesach. And that's what Moshe said to Paro, and Paro could never relate to it. But that's what Torah is, Ki Chag Hashem Lanu. So that's a very interesting insight into how we try and develop in terms of our ruchness, as the Sfasema says on Parshas Kedoshim, Kedoshim Tiyu, Rashi comments, Daber Kol Adas Bnei Yisrael, the Pasuk says, Parsha Zu B'Hakel Nemra, this Parsha was said to everyone, and it was said in the community, because that's where Kedoshim Tiyu actually happens. Now, let's move to the beginning of Perek Yud Aleph, and we will take a look at a Rashi that has been the subject of much discussion. Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Beis. We are moving close to the stage, to Yetzias Mitzrayim, and Yetzias Mitzrayim will be accompanied by Acherechen Yetzu Birchush Gadol. And here it is. Pasuk Beis. Daber na ba'aznei ha'am. Speak, please, in the ears of the people. Bishalu ish me'esrei ehu. Let them borrow or ask a man from his fellow. Isha me'esru usa. A woman from her fellow. Klei chesef uklei zahav. The time has come to assemble the rechush gadol, the gold and the silver. Okay, if the shalu means to borrow, then that means that it was actually they left under false pretenses. And that says the Orach Chaim HaKadosh is part of the midah keneged midah. They were enslaved under false pretenses, and they left under false pretenses. That's also part of the ownership of the Mitzrayim. That feeling of having been taken in, there's a certain agmas nefesh, that it parallels and sometimes even exceeds the hard work itself. That's also part of when they twigged that the Jewish people were not coming back and they'd been taken for all their money. That's also part of the onesh. Rashi comments. And Rashi comments, actually, it's based on the word na. Now, the word na needs to be approached with caution, because strictly speaking, the word na, unculus, will always translate the word na as ke'an, which means now. The literal translation, the strict translation of the word na means now. Now, we know that Rashi explains that the word na means please. Ein na el eloshen bakosha. That, according to many Meforshi Rashi, is not always true. Rashi only means to say it in the places that he points it out. If I'm not mistaken, Rashi says 8 times in the course of his Perush on Chumash, Ein na el eloshen bakosha, and he means in those 8 times. Now here is sources in the Talmud and Maseches Brachos and Daftes, and these are his words. Ein, daber na ba'azneham, please. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was saying, please. What does that mean? Ein na el eloshen bakosha. It's a request. Bivakosha mimcha. I have a request of you. Hasiri makach. Exhort them to take the gold and silver. Now what's the background to the request? Shelo yomer oso tzadik Avram, that tzadik Avram shouldn't say va'avodim ve'inu osem kiyem bahem, that you fulfilled very fully va'avodim ve'inu osem, the slavery and the torture and the persecution, va'acherichen yitzu b'chush gadol lo kiyem bahem. And you didn't fulfill Acherichen Yetzu B'Chush Gadol. If you don't do this favor for me, then that's what Avram will say. So please, ask them for the golden, to get the golden silver, and then me and Avram will be okay. Now, this Rashi has caused sleepless nights for many a rabbi. And the reason why is, and this, of course, it's not Rashi, lo al Rashi to lo naseinu kiya mala Gemara. Rashi sources of the Gemara. But the implications of the Gemara are that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, it's time for the Rechush Gadol, so do me a favor and do the Rechush Gadol, because otherwise Avram will complain. That's it. In layman's terms, that's what it sounds like. That's it. Would there be perhaps a more compelling reason for Rechush Gadol? Like, for example, the fact that you said Va'acherechen Yetzu B'Chush Gadol, lahavdil, for any honest person, if he's undertaken to do something, he will do it to keep his word, not just because if I don't compete, so Plony will have tinus on me. And that's the reason? It doesn't sound so pure. And Kal v'chomer, lahavdil, elef havdolos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ha'hu amar v'lo ya'aseh. The number of answers to this question cannot be counted. Everyone has something to say on this Rashi. And I would like this year to consider the approach of the Aruch HaShulchan. And he had drushes called Kol Ben Levi. And in the course of his drushes, he said something fascinating, and I believe we may have something to add. Where does it all begin? The foretelling of Golas Mitzrayim is in the Bris Ben HaBesarim. The covenant between the pieces. Parshas Lech Lecha, Bereishis, Perek Tesvav. Vayomel Avram, Yadoa Teida, Ki Ger Yezarecha Be'eretz Lo Lehem, Ba'avodim v'inu osam arba me'o shana. Now, let's watch very carefully. Because, as we mentioned last week through the words of Rav Hirsch, we note that there are three stages or three characteristics of the Brisman of Besarim. Number one, Gerus, Geria Zaracha. Number two, Va'avodim, slavery. And number three, Ve'inu, persecution. Now, to us it seems that these are three progressive levels of difficulty. It's not nice to be a Ger. It's less nice to be a slave, and it is the worst to be persecuted. But the Aruch HaShulchan explains differently. A fascinating approach to this pasuk. Yadoa teida, you need to know. Ger yezarecha be'eretz lo lahem is not the first aspect of punishment. Ger yezarecha be'eretz lo lahem is the Jewish people's part of the bargain. It's very interesting, actually. What is a bris? A bris is a deal. It's a covenant. There are two sides to a covenant. So far, the Jewish people seem to be entirely passive. Things will happen to them, and then other things will happen to them. What is their part in the equation? Says Aruch HaShulchan, their part is Ger yezarecha be'eretz lo lahem. That's their responsibility. They need, in order for this to form them and forge them in the optimum way possible as the Jewish people, they need to keep their status as a ger. Things will happen to them, but if they have their Jewish identity to the significant degree, everything that is meant to follow will follow. And that's very interesting. For now, we ask the question, did they succeed? Which is a difficult question to ask, or more correctly, it's only difficult because the answer is hard to say. For we find that in the course of time, the Jewish people lost a great deal of their sense of gerus, or at the very least, tried to. Vatimalei ha'aretz osam, as the Chasam Sofer says, they began to fill out the land, and the Yalkut Shimoni says, Vatimalei ha'aretz osam means every significant venue had Jews in it, including, in the words of the Yalkut, Kirkasoos, Teatroos, the theaters, or whatever was the Egyptian equivalent at the time. They began to insinuate themselves into the indigenous Egyptian scene. That generation died out. It's a new generation. We have the crushing description within a matter of words. The Sifrei in Parshas Vayeschanan, where the Jewish people are described as goy mikerev goy. That's Hashem took the Jewish people out. Goy mikerev goy. Now we have a benign translation. One nation from another. Says the Medrash, goy mikerev goy means one nation that was practically indistinguishable from another. Halala of the Avodah Zarah. Halala of the Avodah Zarah. These are the very unpleasant parts of our sojourn within Mitzrayim. It is true, and this needs to be understood very pondered at length. There are certain things that we did keep. There are certain samamonim. There are certain trappings of a distinct identity that we kept, and we're hanging on for dear life. Lo shinu es shemam, lo shinu es lashonam, lo shinu es mabusham. All of those things that we didn't change, but they were not enough to satisfy the essential requirement that we remain a people with distinct goals and distinct values. And if that's true, then when we talk about the bris, both sides need to deliver. If there is a bris between two, if there's an agreement between two and one side does not hold up their end of the bargain, the other side is not obligated to either. And so, says the Aruch HaShulchan, strictly speaking, we have to say, that's one of the reasons why the Jewish people had to come out early, according to many, we have to say, the Jewish people are not up to par when it comes to their part of the bargain of Ger Yeh Zarecha. If that's true, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu is part of the bargain. Certainly, he may take them out, but it's not an honorable discharge, which brings with it Rechush Gadol. It is a dishonorable discharge. And the sooner they get out, the better, and they shouldn't expect anything else. That is life, lefi, the emes. And now we come to Avraham Avinu. What's significant for the Aruch HaShulchan is, how is Avraham referred to? Both in the Gemara and in Rashi's rendition of the Gemara. Shelo yomo oso tzadik Avraham. Interesting. We don't need to be reminded that Avraham was a tzaddik. When we hear Avraham, we know it's Avraham the tzaddik. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Shelo yomo oso, that tzaddik Avraham. What does he mean by highlighting the fact that he's a tzaddik? Says the Aruch HaShulchan, Chazal and the Bereishis Rabbah have a very specific understanding of what it means for Avraham to be a tzaddik. We translate tzaddik as a righteous man. For Avraham to be a tzaddik meant much more than that. The Pasuk says in Tehillim, Perek Mem Hei, Ahavta tzedek batisna resha, says the Bereishis Rabbah, that refers to Avraham Avinu. And what does it mean? You loved righteousness. You hated evil. Says the Bereishis Rabbah, Ahavta tzedek means Ahavta lehatzdik es habrios. Avram's forte, when he's called a tzaddik, it's contagious. When he's called a tzaddik, it colors the way he sees things. Ahavta lehatzdik es habrios. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, I'm going to destroy the people of Sodom, so there's a certain type of tzaddik, and maybe he wouldn't be wrong, who would say, good. Good riddance. They're the source of all of our problems. And Avraham Avinu sets to work. The longest conversation between Avraham and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is his bargaining, his protracted bargaining for the people of Sodom. And they're Rishayim. And Avraham says, but maybe there's still hope. And it's amazing, if you've never heard it, and we can't remember the time that we never heard it, but to hear it for the first time, 50, 45, 30, you know, there's nothing like it ever again in the Torah. Ahavta lehatzdik es habrios. Batisna resha, you hated evil. Batisna laharshiyam, you hated to incriminate them. If there's any way to salvage them or to look upon them in a positive light. That's what it means for Avraham to be a tzaddik. And the same thing is true in a sense, and this is part of the tension between Avraham and Sarah sometimes. Yishmael, is he good for the Jews? Is he bad for the Jews? Is he good for anyone? That's a machlokus between Avraham and Sarah. Sarah says, get rid of him. No good will come from him. Sarah is very much midas hadin. She counters Avraham, balances him, compliments him. Avraham Avinu, he doesn't like that idea. Alados beno, what will happen to my son? Maybe he's not that bad. Maybe he's not beyond salvage. Sarah says he's beyond salvage. On that occasion, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, she's right. And so, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the MS is the Jewish people don't deserve a Rechush Gadol because they didn't keep their part of the bargain. But Oso Tzaddik Avraham will not give me rest because he will say they did keep their part of the bargain. And here we come, I'm departing slightly from the Aruch HaShulchan, but here we come to a fascinating diuk in the Gemara. I wouldn't say Harianei Kevin Shivim Shana, but I have learned that Gemara, I am sure, at least 70 times. And it never occurred to me before that what Avraham Avinu is saying is, once again, to Gemara and Rashi, that Avraham will say, on the one hand, you fulfilled the Avodah Ve'inu Osam, right? You did the bad news, but not the good news. You didn't fulfill that Tzachenu B'chutz B'chush Gadol. And just this afternoon, inspired by the Aruch HaShulchan, it occurred to me that nowhere does the Gemara say that Avraham shouldn't say that you were Mekayim Ger Yezarecha V'Avodum V'Inu Osam. I mean, if really all of those three things were three of the negative and they were all happened, then Avraham should have mentioned all of them. Why does he mention only two and three and not number one? I think this corroborates the approach of the Aruch HaShulchan. In other words, what the Gemara is saying is Avraham will say, listen. No, he wouldn't say listen. He'll say, it may well be. Ger Yezarecha is not for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to fulfill with them. That was for them to fulfill. That's the point. And maybe they didn't do it. Maybe. But it didn't stop you fulfilling the other two. Of Avodim V'inu Osam. And therefore says Rashi, says Avram Avinu, so something they deserved. They're not all that bad. And those are three parts of the bargain. Two out of three, it's not bad. But this is an Avram Avinu way of looking at things. This is an Oso Tzaddik way of looking at things. Where even if it is, for argument's sake, that they didn't fulfill Ger Yezarecha, but you fulfilled Vavon Avinu Osam, that's also part of the input, and therefore they deserve part of the output. But that's Oso Tzaddik Avram. But that's a favor. That's a favor to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak. Taber na ba'osneha. So this is a fascinating approach from the drushes of the Aruch HaShulchan. Now, we come to Makas Becharos, and as we know, and this is in Perikid Aleph Pasuk Dalet, it is forecast. Perikid Aleph Pasuk Dalet, Vayom Moshe Komar Hashem, Kachatzos Halayla, Ani Yotze Besoch Mitzrayim. Now the important word is kachatzos, because the kaf at the beginning of kachatzos has an implication of approximately ke. Ke means be'erech, and be'erech can mean many things. Okay? If they say the taxi is coming in be'erech chamesh dakot, it can mean many things. That kaf ke chamesh dakot. Why is it so approximate? Why is it so non-specific? Well, as we know, Rashi tells us again, this is from the Gemara in Brochus and Daf Gimel, that Shelo Yitu Itzdagnine Paro, that Paro's astrologers, they shouldn't make a mistake. They might, Gecheshben Chatzos was at 1203, and then Makas Becharos happened at 1206, and then they'll say the Moshe made it up. That's what Rashi says. That's what the Gemara says, and this is probably the nth degree expression of what it means to be stubborn, of what it means to have a person's heart hardened. Because if nine out of nine have come true, and the tenth one is to affect every home, and it's the first one of every home, and the head of the household is looking at the clock, there's something wrong. There is something somewhat fixational going on, which is very unhealthy. And that is kachatzos halayla. That's how Rashi explains. What's interesting is, there's another explanation by one of the Meforshim. His name is Rav Arya Leib Lipkin. I believe he's related to Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, perhaps a nephew. And he says something else. Fascinating further nekuda. In Perikud Beis, Pasikud Beis, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, V'avarti be'eretz Mitzrayim balayla hazeh. Va'avarti, I'll pass through Eretz Mitzrayim. Now, what's interesting is, as we know, by definition, Chatzos is a point in time. Avarti has a kind of an element of duration. Va'avarti, to go from one to the other, to pass through Eretz Mitzrayim, it has a connotation of a certain duration. But there was really no time. Actually, between the first half and the second half of the night, there is no time. What is the meaning of Avarti for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, to pass through Mitzrayim? So, Arya Leib Lipkin said something very interesting. Makas Becharos happened at Chatzos. Chatzos is exactly the point between, shall we say, sunrise, or sunset and sunrise. Now, if it is exactly the instant between sunset and sunrise, then should you have a country that is spread out over any number of tens or hundreds of miles, then actually the exact instant between sunset and sunrise will actually sweep westwards, because the sun will set earlier for the part in the east as it will for the west. And as surely as all of those times set and rise earlier, momentarily, so it is that the instant that exactly divides between sunset and sunrise will actually pass through from east to west. And that is why HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, V'avarti be'eretz Mitzrayim, I will pass through from east to west, and each bracha will die at exactly the point of Chatzos. And that's what the Pasuk says, V'yi b'chatzi alayla, it was b'chatzi alayla, wherever it was. But Moshe Rabbeinu says, Kachatzos, and Kachatzos seems to broaden the scope, because indeed it did take longer than an instant. It actually took however many moments it takes for Chatzos to travel, the instant, in between, to go from east to west. It really was a significant amount of time. Around about Chatzos is the most correct way to describe it. So that's a fascinating comment of Rav Lipkin there on Kachatzos, on the Avot. Now, the final item that I'd like to speak about this evening is in a Rashi. It's in Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Yud Zayin. Ushmartem es ha-matzos. Guard the matzos. What does that mean? Well, it couldn't be simpler. Everybody knows what Shmur Matzah is. Shmartem es ha-matzos, says Rashi, shelo yavo l'dei chimutz. Shouldn't become chomitz. That's it. And then Rashi says something else. He quotes a Mechilta. Rabbi Yoshia Omer, al tikorei es hamatzos, read not matzos, ela es hamitzvos. Try reading these words as saying ushmartem es hamitzvos. And what does it mean? Kederech she'in machmisen es hamatzos, just like you don't allow a matzah to become chometz, kachim nachmisen es hamitzvos. So also one doesn't allow mitzvos to become chometz. Meaning, Elo imbo liyotcha aseo somiyad. If an opportunity for a mitzvah comes to your hand, do it straight away. Otherwise, you are, well, lahavdil, but we would say, hechmatzta. You missed the opportunity. You made it into chometz. Now, I think we can appreciate that on a pshat level, Rashi's first explanation was probably closer to the simple translation. Ushmartem es hamatzos means make sure they don't become chometz. But Rashi was not happy and was not finished until he brought us this, don't read matzahs, read mitzvahs. And the shaila is, right, mara'a al-kacha, right? What does Rashi see as the requirement to bring in this additional drasha? It's without a doubt a drasha, and Rashi only will enlist the help of a drasha if al-derech ha-pshat, things are not entirely fully explained. But what could be not understood about Ushmartem es ha-matzos? So it occurred to me the answer is very simple. And I hope it's not too simple. But the point is, matzos don't need shmirah. Because if they're matzos, they can't become chometz. Dough can become chometz if it's not baked into matzah. Once it's already matzos, it can't be chometz. That is a fact of life. Once dough has been baked and turned into a matzah, it can never be chometz again. For those of you who keep gebrochts, that's only because there's some flour that didn't yet become part of the matzah. But that was not yet invented. Matzahs can never become chometz. So the pasuk should have said, "Ushmartem es habotzek," guard the dough that it doesn't become chometz. Matzahs don't need shmira, and that's why Rashi says there's something else going on here. It says "Ushmartem es hamatzos" because there's another intonation here. Don't read matzahs, read mitzvahs. And now the shaila is "Ma inyan mitzvahs etzah matzahs," as if to say, what does the Torah mean to communicate to me by telling me on this occasion, because is a mitzvah like a matzah? Is a mitzvah like dough? Not really. I mean, dough, if you leave it, it will become chometz, and chometz is a disaster. A mitzvah, if you leave it, won't become chometz. It will be a mitzvah that you did a bit later on. But how is this similar? And they are similar. Kederech she'en machmisen es hamatzos, kach ein machmisen es hamitzvos. They really are equated significantly. And the Maharal here takes over and he unleashes a yesod that I think is phenomenal. It's the Maharal in the Gur Aryeh, but it becomes the Maharal everywhere. It's in the Gevurah Hashem and the Derech HaChaim and in the Nesivos Olam and elsewhere. The Gula happened very quickly. B'chipozim. We left quickly. V'leyachlulis mamea. Why? Well, the Pashtus, we couldn't stay. Even a few more moments, we couldn't stay. But the Maral says something else is going on. Yetzias Mitzrayim is the point that the Jewish people become connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is the point, right, from Yetzias Mitzrayim, as Bechor Ga'alta. Our connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu means that He is the one that took us out, and the kinyan, so to speak, the way in which He attached us to Him, was in the way that He does things. As far as it is possible to say a statement like this, Yetzias Mitzrayim had godly characteristics because it was HaKadosh Baruch Hu taking us out, and God does not exist within time. And therefore, the way that we were removed from Mitzrayim and attached to Him, if we could borrow a colloquial expression, took no time at all. Because that's what made it a HaKadosh Baruch Hu Dikah act, so to speak. And as it says, V'avarti Beretz Mitzrayim, ani v'lo malach, v'ani v'lo sarf, anihu v'li lo achel min HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chvolo v'atzmo. He Himself is orchestrating at this stage Yetzias Mitzrayim, and therefore it's done, so to speak, on His terms. Takes no time at all. And therefore, of course, the extent to which time is inescapable, but time is minimized. Time is brushed aside. Everything is rushed. Everything is hurried. And Makas Bechoris itself literally took no time at all, because between the first half and the second, first half of the night and second half of the night is no time at all. There is no instant even in between. It's either part of the first or the second. And therefore, says Maharal, we understand. Why is the Torah so insistent? It's a bit of time of the craw. Why is the Torah so insistent that we eat matzah and we don't eat chametz? Avoiding chametz and eating matzah on Pesach, it's not just do you remember how Yetzias Mitzrayim was done? Do you appreciate the nature of the Jewish people? Do you appreciate the nature of their connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Eating chametz, the difference between matzah and chametz is time. That is all. Matzah plus time equals chametz. And therefore, making a point of avoiding chametz and only eating matzah is subscribing to the connection that was forged between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu when He took us out in no time at all. And in fact, says Maharal, this will explain to us something very interesting. If we remember from our Godesh al Pesach, matzah zo, shanu ochlin, al shumma, why do we eat matzah? So the answer is, because we came out so quickly, so then the dough didn't have time to rise. And that's why we eat matzah. So let's ask a simple question. If anyone has a parshas bow handy at the Seder table, there will be trouble. Because if we look in parshas bow, in this week's parsha, you will see that the Jewish people are commanded to eat matzah and warned of chametz even before they ever left Mitzrayim. So now the shaila is, and this is the Abba Benel's question, how is it possible, Ramban as well, how is it possible for us to explain matzah as a zecher l'Yetzias Mitzrayim when the zecher happened even before Yetzias Mitzrayim? Matzah was there before we even left. So there must be more to it. It was a value and it was an absolute requirement even before we left in a hurry. So how can we put down our eating of matzah and avoidance of chametz to the way that we left Mitzrayim? That's a good shaila. Says the Maharal, it's no problem. Because we need to understand that the connection between the speed in which we left Mitzrayim and the eating of matzah, it's not a historical connection. It's a chemical connection. One is a food expression of the event. And really what that means is, the reason why we don't eat matzah, the reason why we eat matzah not chametz, and the reason why we left in a hurry is exactly the same reason. And moreover, says the Maharal in the Gevurah Hashem, and this is a fascinating point, the Jewish people eat matzah even before they left Mitzrayim because they need to be formatted to leave in a hurry. As if to say, they already need to be partaking of this no time at all food and digesting it, that is their first step in what will then express itself tomorrow as they leave Mitzrayim in no time at all. And thus is the cause and effect relationship. In other words, often, as any good economist will tell you, two things will always be there together, and you're wondering which is the cause and which is the effect. Don't forget to consider that there may be a common cause for which they are both effects. The matzah and the leaving in a hurry, neither is the cause and neither is the effect. We eat matzah, zecher, for leaving in a hurry, and we left in a hurry after we ate matzah, because they're both effects of a common cause. It's the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was establishing his relationship with us. I wonder whether it is no accident that actually the first mitzvah that begins, even before we get to Yetzias Mitzrayim, and it seems to have been put in there as an additional mitzvah, but it's the first mitzvah, is Kiddush HaChodesh. That's how the whole parak begins. Shmos Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Beis, HaChodesh HaZalachem Rosh Chodashim, Kiddush HaChodesh. And from there to other matters. Lesson one, Rosh Chodesh. Lesson two, Pesach. Ma'inyan Pesach, it's a Rosh Chodesh. It's true, you can't have Pesach without Rosh Chodesh. But Kiddush HaChodesh is about our relationship with time. Kiddush HaChodesh is an expression of the fact that the Beis Din has the ability to declare when it will be Rosh Chodesh, and so it is. HaChodesh HaZalachem, Masur Lachem. It's a Pesach Tikka Mitzvah. And now, if I may, I would like to add, with reservations, one final point. I had much time to ponder this Maharal. But this time last year, I was stuck in Hong Kong airport for about 12 hours. It was me and this Maharal. And lots of Chinese people. And I thought about it a lot. And I wonder whether one can say the following. There is a certain group of mitzvahs that women are exempt from. They're called mitzvahs asei shazman groma, time-bound mitzvahs. And it's something of a mystery. There are reasons that are given, and given by Rishonim. I wonder whether, based on the Maharal, one could say the following. The whole concept of a time-bound mitzvah becomes very interesting in light of this discussion, because mitzvahs, which are godly acts, and are as close as we can try and connect ourselves to God, and as we see that all of that happens outside of time, but there are some mitzvahs that are governed by time. They're under time. What about them? The more something is governed by time, from a certain point of view, the more removed it is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the more one needs, in a sense, to be involved in it to sanctify. Women make a bracha in the morning, she'asani kirtzono. I have not checked the local English translation recently, but I do know that the Zohar Kodesh does not translate the word she'asani kirtzono the way it is normally understood. She'asani kirtzono means he made me in the way he saw fit. The Zohar Kodesh says she'asani kirtzono means that women were made more in accordance with the divine will than men. In other words, they are more naturally spiritual than men. I cannot speak for the entire female race. I know my wife. I can certainly declare it to be true. But in a sense, what that means is, perhaps, that because of the she'asani kirtzono, because women are to a certain degree that much closer, they're the ones who bring life into the world. They're the ones who resemble much closer the creational aspect. Therefore, they have less in common with time-bound mitzvahs. Because something that's bound by time is that degree more distant from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's the domain of men. But as women are she'asani kirtzono, it's not an area that is necessary for them to be involved in. With one exception. Pardon me, not one exception, but there is a unique situation. Matzah. The mitzvah of eating matzah on Seder night is a time-bound mitzvah. And women are obligated. Manishtana, we must ask, ha-mitzvah azos mikol ha-mitzvos? I believe the answer is because the mitzvah of matzah is a terrific combination. Why? because it's time-bound, of course. It's only on the first night of Pesach. It's time-bound. But what the mitzvah is about is the release from time, because that's what matzah is all about. And therefore, I believe, based on the Maharal, if we could say time of dekra, that the reason why women are chayiv in this time-bound mitzvah as opposed to other time-bound mitzvahs is because the mahus of the mitzvah, which is extra time, at beyond time, overcomes the parameters of the mitzvah, which are governed by time, and therefore it reverts to their domain and becomes a mitzvah that they have as much a chelek in, as much an obligation is, as men. This is something I believe is worth pondering, and I wanted to share with you this evening, and our time is on its course. We are, at the very least in terms of the end of Shir, bound by time, so we'll leave it over there for this evening.